Father Richard Rohr, speaking on contemplative prayer.
Okay, as I told you a few days ago, this talk is now the counterpart to the one we gave you on liberation theology. But in many ways, of the two talks, this is really the more demanding, or if you want to use the word, the more radical. I think the contemplative mind is the most absolute assault on the secular worldview that you can have, because it really is a different mind. And what we've been doing, I think this has been the failure of so much of liberalism, is it has been trying to critique from really the same mind. And that'll make more sense later. But it's still what I'm going to call the calculative mind, or the calculating mind. It's the egocentric mind that reads everything in terms of personal advantage, in terms of usually short-term effect, in terms of what's in it for me and how will I look and how will I look good. As long as you read reality from that small self and read everything calculatively, I don't think you're going to see things in any really new way. Maybe you'll move along the political spectrum from left to right or right to left. But what all the great religions have talked about is a different way of seeing, that is actually a different perspective, a different vantage point, a different starting point. I use often Albert Einstein's quote. He said, "No problem can be solved by the same consciousness that caused it." Now, what we're trying to do is solve our problems by the same consciousness that caused them. Which read everything in terms of cause and effect and personal advantage. The word contemplation really only became popular again through really Thomas Merton's writings in the 50s and 60s. Probably a lot of religions use the word meditation. Actually, the word most Christians are familiar with is simply the word prayer. But the word prayer became, unfortunately, in the West, like everything did in the West, became something functional, something you did, again, to achieve a desired effect, which puts you back in charge. As soon as you make prayer a way to get something, and listen to most prayers, that's what they are, and it's okay. I think God's used to it by now. But it's really not any kind of new state or new consciousness. It's the same old consciousness. How can I get God to do what I want God to do? You know, and so maybe I'll talk to him about it. You know, cure my grandma. You know, well, I guess if he gets enough, he's probably counting, or she's probably counting. How many cure my grandmas do I get? And if I get enough of them, I'll do it. But that's where most people are at with prayer. It's not really a change of consciousness. It's the egocentric self deciding what it needs and what it wants and resorting to what we now call a higher power, because you can't get any better than that, to get on your side, to get what you want. So you can basically remain an untransformed, egocentric person who's just now, instead of manipulating everybody else, which is all the ego can do, is it now tries to manipulate God. Now, that's why at least one reason, I think, religion is in such desperate straits today. Because it really isn't transforming people. It's merely giving people some pious and religious ways to again be in charge and to again be in control. It's still the small self. And what a genuine religion is talking about is a transformed self. It's a different I. Paul uses that wonderful phrase, "I live no longer not I." It's a different I, a different sense of self that's here. I think until you've come to that, you're not at foundational transformation. You might be pious, you might be denominational, you might be religious in the way the term is normal.